Ms. Manzi. You could again just tell us which page you're on to start us up again.
Mr. Chair, I am on page 6 of the some article, section 4. Section 4 is a provision from the House bill that relates to promotion of the Angel Investment Credit in Greater Minnesota. It requires the Commissioner of Deed to develop a plan to increase awareness and use of the credit in Greater Minnesota and set a target that at least 30% of the credits awarded will go to Greater Minnesota investments in Greater Minnesota businesses beginning in the second half of calendar 2013. If in the second half of 2013 or in any subsequent year that goal is not met, then the credit percentage for the Angel Investment Credit increases to 40% for the next calendar year for investments made in Greater Minnesota in order to spur people looking at those businesses and making the investments in Greater Minnesota. Section 5 is also relating to the Angel Investment Credit. I believe this section was in both bills, and it provides for more information to be disclosed about businesses in which investments are made. Under present law, only the name of a business may be disclosed, and this expands that to allow the address, telephone number, email address, name of a contact person, and the industry type, so that the public can get more information about where these investments are being made.
Ms. Manzi, for Senator Limmer's purpose, the expansion on the data privacy, is it for applicants or is it for those that have been approved as angel investors? And is it the recipients? Mr. Nelson, is it?
Yes.
Welcome, Madam Chair. He might be able to help us out here.
Okay.
Thank you for talking for me.
Madam Chair, the way the process works, and Mr. Nelson from Deed can correct me if I get this not right, is that businesses apply to be certified as qualified businesses, and they must meet the definitions in the law. Once a business is approved as a qualified business, then it's eligible to receive investments from qualified investors. The way this reads is that the information on the qualified business would be made public once it had been approved, but I don't believe that necessarily means that it is going to receive an investment from someone that would qualify for the credit.
Mr. Nelson, that's correct?
Sure, yes, that is correct.
And could you just state your name?
John Nelson, the tax credit program.
Thank you. And I wasn't as focused on this before as I am now. I'm wondering, is this information, I understand that it's so that we can contact these folks, but is there also some reporting requirement back for these businesses back to Deed?
When businesses do receive investments pursuant to the program, yes, they do have a this provision. As you stated, is for once a business is qualified, pursuant to the section in the request here, investors and so what this provision does is provide just the bare name of the company on our website has its additional contact.
Mr. Nelson,
Senator Arvin.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nelson, is there reporting back then that they're doing to the department? Is that public or private information?
Mr. Nelson.
The reporting back information is public and is part of our annual
report.
Senator Arvin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, now we get to several sections that were in the Senate bill, so Ms. Pollack is going to describe them.
Mr. Chair, beginning with Section 6 and then Sections 8, 9, 17, 18, and 20 are all refer to updated references to the Internal Revenue Code for purposes of the IRA rollover provision. that is allowed in the or that is provided in the Senate tax bill. Section 7 is the withholding tax provision, and it strikes language that references the contractor withholding requirement. And we also repeal that in Section 21.
Mr. Chair, Section 10 increases the percentage rate for the research and development credit for the second tier from 2.5% to 3.1%. The second tier of the credit applies to expenditures over $2 million, and the change is effective beginning in tax year 2012.
Ms. Pollack?
Mr. Chair, Section 11 provides some clarifications to the definition section in the provisions of the Minnesota Historical Structure Preservation Credit. It strikes some kind of redundant language, and it provides updated or references to the definitions that are allowed in the Internal Revenue Code. Section 12 is also some clarifying language. It replaces the term expenses with the term expenditures, because that is the term that's used throughout the language in the credit provisions. It adds some language to require the office of the State Historic Preservation Office to notify the developers of a project in writing of their determination for eligibility for a credit or grant. And it also provides new language to allow decisions of the office only pertaining to the eligibility determination to be challenged as a contested case under the administrative procedure statutes. That contested case proceeding must be initiated within 45 days of the date of the notification by the office. Section 13 also provides some clarifying language. It provides that assignments of credits are not valid unless the assignee notifies the commissioner within 30 days that the assignment was made. It provides that credits that are that may be passed through from a partnership or LLC taxes, a partnership or an S corp, or multiple owners of a property, those credits that are passed through to partners, members, shareholders, et cetera, are not an assignment of a credit. And finally, it allows grant agreements between the office and the recipient of a grant to be transferred to another entity. Section 14 just adds some language to allow other executed agreements within partnerships or S corporations, as I mentioned before, to be allowed the pass-through provisions to be allowed pertaining to any of any other executed agreements that those organizations may have. Section 15 extends the sunset dates of the historic structure preservation credit. And Section 16 is the veterans jobs tax credit in the House bill.
Ms. Manzi?
Mr. Chair, the veterans jobs tax credit in the document before you is somewhat similar to what was in the House bill. It's more of a hybrid of what was in the House bill and the Jobs Now credit proposed in the governor's tax bill. The Jobs Now credit in the governor's tax bill would have applied to veterans, recent graduates, and some other groups of employees, and this is limited to veterans. It's also limited to the first 2,500 new employees hired. The way this would work is that a qualified employer would apply for a credit for a person they had hired if they were a qualified veteran. A qualified veteran has to be someone who was in active service in a combat zone since September 11, 2001, as separated from active military service, has been unemployed for at least 4 weeks in the last year, and was unemployed on the date that they were hired. once the employer applies, then a credit is reserved for them on a first-come, first-served basis for the first $2,500 people hired in between the second half of this year and the end of next year. So that's the time period for the credit. The credit would be equal to $3,000 for each person hired in the second half of this year, and then $1,500 for each person hired in the, well, I'm sorry, it's just the first half of next year, so it just runs through June 30th of next year. Then once the person has been employed by the qualified employer for a year, the business would be awarded the credit. There's a provision with regard to construction employers, since construction businesses tend to be more seasonal in nature, that they get awarded a tentative credit initially, and then they have to reapply within 6 months of when they got the tentative credit to confirm that they still are indeed employing the person who was qualified for the credit. If they're not still employing them, then the credit that they had been allocated goes back into the pool and may be reallocated to another employer.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Manzi, does this describe, or I mean, do we need to have any sort of description of an application form, or is that something the department just automatically does and it's going to happen?
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, if you look on page 16, line 5, it requires the Commissioner of Revenue to develop an internet application by July 1st of this year to allow employers to apply for tentative credits, and then it provides for the information that would have to be on the application form. And, yeah, so that's what's in there about the application. I think that the Commissioner would have latitude within, you know, decide what the form would look like and so on, as long as it included the information that's listed here on page 16.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Ms. Pollack, are we going to wrap this article up here?
Mr. Chair, yes. I already referenced Section 17 and 18. Section 19 is a revised effective date for the Historic Structure Rehabilitation Credit. It adds language to make the credit effective for expenditures that were first paid by the developer or taxpayer after May 1st, 2010, and for rehabilitation that occurred after that date, provided that the application is submitted before the project has been placed in service. And this provision is effective the day following final enactment and applies retroactively for structures that were placed in service after May 1st, 2010. But it does provide that no credit certificates may be issued until July 1, 2013.
Section 20?
Mr. Chair, Section 20 also references the IRA rollover provisions that I mentioned before, and Section 21 is the repealer of the contractor withholding requirement.
Thank you, Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair.
Questions to Senator Ortman's motion on Article 2. Senator Ortman.
Just want to renew the motion to adopt Article 2.
Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. If we could pass out Article 3, please.
I don't understand.
Article 3. Kind of retroactive. Do you remember when that was?
We're going to try and put on turbo.
Which one's the federal?
I remember.
You mean the jobs now?
Yeah, and some of this language is referencing the federal.
Hey, this is enthralling.
I am in no
hurry.
Yeah.
I'll have to talk.
What's that? Yeah.
No, who does
the only thing
that
could have made it worse right was if it would have been like a...
No, I don't think it has anything.
You know, the rain slash sleet makes outside makes it a little bit more tolerable sitting right in here. Okay.
It may be distant somehow.
I will check.
You know, botch you. It's scary, isn't it?
You can feel it.
Scary.
Senator Ortman moves Article 3, Sales and Use Taxes.
Thank you.
Thanks for moving.
You're welcome.
Senator Ortman moves Article 3. Who would like to start, Ms. Pollack or Ms. Pollack?
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Chair, Article 3, Section 1. Strikes language pertaining to the accelerated vendor remittance schedules. These are currently scheduled to blink off due to the surplus in the February forecast, so these provisions are no longer necessary. Section 2 provides an exemption for laboratory services that are that examine and report results for specimens collected outside the state. It requires the that the entity that is claiming the exemption to keep adequate records demonstrating that the specimen was in fact collected outside the state. Section 3 adds payments for rent-to-own or lease-to-own used vehicles to the definition of retail sale. Under this provision, the sales tax on these types of transactions would be assessed at the time of each monthly or periodic lease payment.
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Section 4 is the provision pertaining to the capital equipment sales tax exemption. And as you'll see on page 9, the exemption is...
Ms. Pollack, hold that thought. We're in a very brief recess.